absolutely dreadful. It's a demonstration of the coercive power and control that these groupings try to enslave their communities with and beleaguer their communities with. They are, on occasions, simply organized crime groupings or gangs. On other occasions, they are organized crime groupings who badge themselves with a particular paramilitary-style badging. It is a branding of a grouping to simply enhance and inflate the fear factor that they bring to the situation. It drives fear and dread into the local community. It is an attack with very often by these groupings upon their own communities. I would have concerns that with all that has been happening in recent days, if we lose some of the momentum in driving forward towards disbandment of all of these groupings, that it will become intercommunity attacks, which...
What do you mean by that?
Mercifully, to this point, we haven't seen community set against community.
Do you mean loyalists set against Republicans?
I mean areas which would have within them, embedded within them, either organized crime groups who brand themselves with paramilitary-style branding, who would then attack another community, as opposed to enforcing their control within their own community.
Why would they do that?
If tensions are heightened now with the whole political situation that we now have, vacuums are created. It is difficult for others to step into the breach, to fill those vacuums and to move forward with the strategy towards the disbanding of the groups. If tension is so heightened within the entire society that we live in by all that has been happening in recent days, we had a strategy under Fresh Start. We produced the draft strategy. It was produced in May of last year. It was adopted in an action plan in July of last year by the executive, which, of course, is not functioning at this point. It was arising from the assessment of the paramilitary groupings from the previous October, which had been produced and had been verified by another panel. All of that work was being done. The strategy was being rolled out. The various departments that have responsibilities for parts of the strategy were all working upon that. I hope that that work will be able to be carried forward without delays and without hindrance. I believe that the executive and many others that we consulted with at that time in the preparation of the strategy were fully and completely behind the efforts to bring about disbandment.
You've talked of your hope. What is your fear?
My fear is that the tensions that will emerge now will create some cover for various groupings to say, how could we possibly go away now for good and for all when we don't know what may be needed in future days in terms of defence of this or that or the other?
That's chilling.
That is dreadful. If people then use that as a barrier and offer it as a barrier, oh, we can't disband now. We need disbandment of all of these groups. We need to move society beyond paramilitarism in all of its shades and forms and descriptions.
When asked about paramilitary involvement in this case, the police won't go further than saying those involved were criminals. Whoever they were, they took the law into their own hands.
I think, Seamus, that the police are adopting that position quite rightly and wisely, in my view, in my respectful view. They're adopting the position that, I go back to the point I was making to you about branding. There are organised crime groups within our communities who use this branding when it of paramilitarism, and they are not people with any kind of semblance or sense of a cause.
Is it about taking the law into their own hands and the interests they would claim of the community? Or is it about power and promoting their own interests?
It's about coercive power and control within their community. It's about operating on the basis of fear and intimidation of their community. These groupings are also extorting monies and involved in all kinds of racketeering and criminality generally. And this is part and parcel of how they control the community in which they function.
Back in April, a police officer was quoted in a newspaper saying death threats and so-called punishment attacks happen daily. I would say we get a dozen death threats a week throughout North and West Belfast, and they're just the ones we're told about. He said, we know who these guys are, but it's virtually impossible to get the evidence against them as people aren't coming forward to talk to police.
We're back to the difference between intelligence and evidence. And if people in society generally don't come forward and express their horror at what has happened to these folk last evening in their home, trying to protect their son, hospitalised from shootings by a gang who decide to take it upon themselves to inflict this upon them with no fear of justice catching up with them in circumstances where people are so afraid to identify who these people are. And there are people out there who undoubtedly know.
And few of them are brought to justice.
Yes, because of the fact that it is so difficult to cross the Rubicon of getting to a culture of lawfulness where people are prepared to speak up and say, we know who's doing this, we know who's behind this, we know where the guns are coming from, we know where the guns are hidden, we know the houses where these attacks are being plotted from. Give that information, allow the searches and seizures to be carried out, allow the arrests to be carried out, allow the intelligence to morph, if you like, into proper evidence to be brought before a court, allow the people to be brought before our justice system, and then, of course, there are all of the dimensions within the criminal justice system that then need to become active in looking at bail and people released on licence and sentencing and all of that.
John,
there are a lot of issues there, and there needs to be a maintaining of momentum through all of that.